Now, Dan Kiely from Tarbert will be well known to many of our listeners on Radio Kerry. A very well known businessman and, of course, a politician who's had a varied and interesting life, both politically and otherwise, here in Ireland and across the water in the United States. Tomorrow is the launch of his book, Final Count, his memoirs of his time in business and in politics in Kerry. I'm delighted to say Dan joins us this morning from our Tralee studio. Dan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Gerry, to you and your listeners.
Congratulations on the book. When did you decide to write it and why did you decide to write it?
Well, the book was inside me for many years, and the late Weishie Fogarty, you mentioned him there a while ago, he kept saying to me, there's a book in you, there's a book in you, Dan, write it and write it. And it happened about 5 years ago. I go to Brussels every year to a friend of mine, a farmer, and I was out on his farm, and it came a very wet day, and pouring rain, nothing much to do, and I was in his house, and I decided to start pen to paper, and I did that, and I kept adding and adding on to it over the years. And originally I got a writer, Jeremy Murphy, who put it together for me.
Okay, so that's why you decided to go there. And look, it's been some story, Dan. Tell me about your beginnings in Tarbert. You were one of 17.
Yeah, a large family. My father was a garda in Tarbert. We were inside in a non-middle house, and three bedrooms, one kitchen, sitting room combined, the whole thing. No electricity, no running water, dodgers, but everybody was the same. And there were difficult times, but there were good times as well. Like, and everybody had to pull their weight. And at a young age, you were out working. I was working with farmers at 10, 11 years of age, and working tinning out there and mangles and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah. You did a lot of work on the bog and slaughtering pigs.
The bog was the main part. That was our main source of energy. And we spent an awful lot of time in the bog when I was a young fella. And when my elder brothers started working, it was left to me to do all the stacking, the footing, the refooting, and then the drawing out and getting a donkey to draw out the turf out in the road. A lot of labour attached to it, like, and a lot of work in the bogs.
Yeah, incredible. And look, your mother was in Dunmanway. Your father hails from Kish came, and you had a house full of music, Dan, is that right?
Yeah, but both from both sides. My mother was a very good violinist, and my father then was used to play a brass instrument, the baritone, and his father had a brass band in Kish game, and they were very famous, and it was all music all the time with all of us. Yes.
Okay, now immigration was part of your story as well, Dan. You're a lot of your family, including yourself, well, spread your wings and took off to America.
The first one in my family immigrated at 14, my sister Cathy, and I think she was the foundation stone of the family to America. And she started working with the American Telephone Company in New York, and she started going to night school and stayed with my aunt, my father's sister. And from there, she brought my other brother, Tim, out. And then they brought Pete out and got their own apartment. And then I kept begging Cathy to bring me out. I was doing my leaving, and my parents wanted me to finish the leaving. I wanted to go to New York, and eventually they gave in, and she had sent the money for my ticket to New York, and got all the paperwork done, and I arrived in New York. And in 1960, little Christmas Day, I travelled.
Christmas Day?
Little Christmas, yeah.
Little Christmas, oh yes, January 1960, so.
Yeah, 1960, yeah.
And was it Kathleen, or was it Paddy or Tim or Pete that influenced you to go to America?
Oh, it was...
You had an uncle there too?
Yeah, and my aunts and everything. It was myself for that time, all the parcels during the war years, coming in from New York with clothes and coffee and other stuff inside, and the parcels coming in. All I had in my head was America.
Yeah. Well, when you make that decision, when you think back to it now, that was it, look, obviously the done thing, was it anyone who wanted to try, and like there wasn't much here in terms of enterprise or trying to develop yourself or get up the ladder, shall we say it, or develop businesses? There wasn't much. You just knew you had to go. Was that part of the thinking?
It was absolutely, there was absolutely nothing around at the time, nothing. I remember the first job my brother got him down in Shannon Airport. He, with a lot of influence through my father, he got a job in the flight kitchen, arranging the meals for the planes to go on back and forth to New York. And that was difficult at the time, and travelling down and getting digs and all that down in Shannon. So it was very hard to get jobs at the time in Ireland, very hard.
And so you went to America. Your first job? Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, exactly.
How did you not end up as a high financier or a banker after that?
My sister Cathy again was very friendly with a woman by the name of Miss Koch, who worked in Goldman Sachs. She was in the inner department there, and she lived in the Bronx, right close to my sister Cathy, and she got to meet her through dog walking, and she used to have a dog, and they got friendly and chatting, and then they said I was coming out, and she said bring him down for an interview, and I went to New York and I saw her there, and then Monday morning I was down in Wall Street for an interview. And I got the job there as an office boy, first running around the office. And I was mad about it. I was delighted. I loved every hour. And the funny thing about it, I was making $30 a week, which was at the time £10. My father was at home as a policeman, making £7 a week. £3 a week more than my father, 17 years of age.
My God.
Yep.
You told him when you left, you'd come back and buy him a car.
I did, yes. I did, and it happened. He was doing, when he was doing his duty that time, and the guard, he had bad rain gear. He'd come in most days drowned, and my mother would be wiping him down with towels. And I kept saying to him, I said, when I go to New York, I'll buy you a car.
Yeah, yeah, incredible. You got to do that. You also got involved in the GAA out there.
I got very involved through the late John Kerry O'Donnell, yeah. I got involved in Gaelic Park, and I got involved with the Kerry team there, senior team and junior team. And the junior team, there was no interest in them, and I took over the junior team, and I won 3 New York championships in a row with them.
Incredible. And that kind of plugged you in as well, as you already were like plugged into the Kerry GAA community out there. And that moved on to dance halls then. We're going to talk more about that element of it, and we're going to get into the politics too. Stay with me. We're talking with Dan Kiely, former councillor, former senator, about his book Final Count, which is launching tomorrow. We'll have more with Dan after we take these. Yeah, we're talking with Dan Kiely about former senator, former councillor, about his life in politics and business in Kerry. He's launching his book Final Count tomorrow. And Dan, look, you leased a dance hall, I know, called the Red Mill in the Bronx for some time, but then you came back to Ireland and you took over the Hibernian in Ballybunion.
The Hibernian came before, well, the Hibernian, yeah. That's correct. Yeah, the Red Mill was the first venture I was in. I got involved in the bar business through Gaelic Park again. I got a job from John Kerry O'Donnell above in the beer stall. And then he brought me into the main bar, and I started working there at weddings and functions and stuff like that. So I worked there quite a bit. As a matter of fact, between Wall Street and working there and Gaelic Park, I worked for 9 months without a day off at one stage.
My God.
Going straight from Wall Street straight up to Gaelic Park and do a function back home, do another function the following day, and then the match on Sunday. And that was a big thing, the games on Sundays in Gaelic Park, yeah.
Yeah, they were huge. But when you got back home, like you had a place in Yall as well.
I got involved, I bought the Red Mill with the mine hands from Ratmore, and there was only a 4-year lease left in it, and we took a chance on it, and it was in the Bronx. And there was no dance hall in the Bronx. You had two in Manhattan, the Jagger House in 86th Street, and then you had the Central Ballroom with Bill Fuller down in Midtown Manhattan. You had nothing in the Bronx, and a lot of the Irish were living in the Bronx. The Red Mill came up by accident. It was mentioned to me. I was working in the bar in Gaelic Park, and I went over to have a look at the Red Mill, and I saw there was huge potential there, and we bought it. For small money, it was $15,000 at the time, $5,000 down, and the other $10,000 over the 4-year period to be paid in monthly installments. And that was our first investment. And it was like really a gold mine when we got it opened. We had 1,000 people there every weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night.
Brilliant.
So that's where it started. Then money started coming in, and we got the chance of buying the hotel in Yall, the Esplanade, and that was our first purchase at £12,000 at the time. That was a lot of money. And the second one then a year later came in Ballybunion, the Hibernian, that cost £17,000, and I could have bought at the time for the £17,000 in Ballybunion for the Hibernian. I could have bought the Ashling Hotel in Dublin. It was for sale at the same time.
My God.
But the Dublin and the cities didn't appeal to me. I wanted to get back to...
to where you're from.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And look, you got in then. Look, Joe Dolan, Dickie Rock, Tom Roy Orbison.
Yeah, I had Roy Orbison twice in a ballroom I built in Ballybunin. A lot of people couldn't believe that he would be there, but he was there twice with me. Yeah,
unbelievable.
I mean, the opening night when I opened the ballroom in Ballybunin that I built, I had 4,200 people inside in that hall on the opening night.
4,200.
At 10 shillings a head.
My God. They were huge events. There was such a demand for it.
Well, that time with Dickie Rocker, with Brendan Byer or Joe Dolan on any of those, you'd be guaranteed a crowd of 2,500 to 3,000 people like a night.
Yeah, they were superstars. Look, did that lead you then, or did you always have an interest in the political side of things?
Well, my father was a member of the local Cumberland Tarbert. When he left the Guards, and there was only 5 or 6 in the coming, and he kept saying to me, look, get involved, and it really didn't interest me, but then again it did, because the first time when I tried for planning permission in Ballybunin, there was a lot of objections to me, and I got involved with John O'Leary's campaign when he went for TD in 1967. I had some self-drive cars and I brought the full fleet over to him. And when I was having difficulty, he brought me to Dublin to meet the minister at the time. And he just said to me, I said, that there was objections. And he said, go away and build a ballroom.
You got it sorted out.
Yeah, right there and then, yeah.
So that got you into the politics. Did you catch a bug then
I did. And I suppose there's a bug. Maybe I'd regret later in my life. I'd rather stick with my business, maybe. I put too much of my time into it.
Yeah. Well, look, there's a listener here that says, my Dan Kiley memory. Caller remembers seeing Dan coming down the main Oak Park Road in Tralee in an open-top car. It was like the President of the United States had arrived into town. He had his hands outstretched like the Pope. I'll never forget it. Was that one of your campaigns?
I suppose it was. Anything, I always try to put a bit of excitement into each of my campaigns anyway. I'll say that much.
You have to have the razzmatazz, of course, to get the excitement going.
Yeah, I had that. Like, and I stood at in the rallies, and that we always put a bit of razzmatazz into it. Yeah.
Yeah. Very important. Look, that was an incredible time in politics. Tell me about that period. From you were elected as Janet in 1981, but tell me about the period 1982, three elections. 1981, 1982, and 1982 again. It was general election 1981. There was February 1982 and November 1982. It was a tumultuous time in Irish politics.
They were very difficult times. I had 5 elections in 18 months at that time.
5 elections?
I had 5 elections. I had 2 general elections and 3 Senate elections. And Kate Ahern was the TD, and she was defeated. And she decided not to run for the Senate, and I ran for the Senate, and I got elected. I lasted 8 months, and then all of a sudden the government fell, and there was another election. And they wanted me to run. I was very unlucky at that time period. Like I was polling very well in North Kerry. I was polling over 5,500 first preference votes with 3 in Tarbert, where my back was to them, the Shannon, and I was a half a mile on the Limerick border. Like, you know,
you were in a tough spot geographically, and you were against some of the biggest names, the Dick Springs, the McAllistrums, the Foleys, Jimmy Deanahan. Those sort of names that were there for decades.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And I put up a very good campaign. So, like, I was very unlucky. I was shot the first campaign, only 50 or 60 votes to be a TD. Like, and the second time was around the same. So,
Yeah. Incredible. When you think back now, was it a thing of, look, you fought your best. It just came so close. If you ever did make it to a TD, do you think that would have changed everything?
Of course it would, but I put too much of my time, actually, at time into 18 months. Like, I took my eye off my business at the time.
Yes.
Which really suffered over it, and I regret that.
It was one or the other, I suppose.
Yeah, it was, yes.
You couldn't make two of yourself then.
Yeah, absolutely not. I was going 12 and 14 hours a day, 7 days a week, like, between running the business and trying to run the politics, and it was non-stop, like.
Yeah, it certainly was. Dan, stay with me. We're going to talk a bit more about this and about the launch of the book itself as well. If you have any memories, any thoughts on Dan Kiley, his political and business career, then get in touch with us. The Final Count is the name of the book, being launched tomorrow. We'll hear more in Listowel. We'll hear more from Dan after we take these. Yeah, keep your comments, views and opinions coming into us on the programme. We're speaking with former councillor, former senator, former Fianna Fáil man, Dan Kiely. He's launching his memoirs, his autobiography called The Final Count in Listowel tomorrow evening. Lots of comments coming into here, Dan, coming in for you here, Dan. Jerry, I remember Dan, 1997 to 1982. He used to buy foxskins for £20, says Pat in Killarney. Great money back then. I suppose that's the situation then. Another listener says, I was at Roy Orbison in Ballybunion, says a Douala listener, when Dan had the dance hall there. Another listener saying, when Dan was on the council, the local roads got tarred. There you go, Dan. What do you make of that?
That's very good comments. I'm really happy about them, really.
Well, you've lots of more to come in. We'll get to those shortly. Tell me about your time in the council and tell me about, I suppose, the decision you made in 2014 to leave Fianna Fáil. You were still going. You still felt you could be competitive. And, you were competitive subsequently in almost taking a seat.
At that particular time, there was only six councillors in the Listowel electoral area, and they changed the system. They did away with the urban council, so Listowel electoral area wound up with seven seats. Fianna Fáil decided to run two candidates only, and I put up a very good vote at the convention. I was only a few votes short of John Brassel, who got the nomination, and they split the constituency into Listowel and the rural part, which was totally wrong, because the Listowel people were voting for me as well, and I didn't get the delegates then at that convention from Listowel to vote for me, and the whole thing was topsy-turvy, and they decided just to run two candidates, one from Listowel and one rural candidate. And I mean, I had myself well established before that, and
you knew the votes, you knew the tallies, you knew every highway and byway, and you felt this is the wrong strategy.
Well, exactly. I told them they were giving a seat away. It was there for the begging. I mean, when I got elected to the council first in 1979, we Fianna Fáil won four seats out of the six at that stage. Sinn Féin had one and Fine Gael had the other, and that was a total support in North Kerry. And then all of a sudden, I mean, in today term, we have one Fianna Fáil councillor in North Kerry. So,
yeah,
the opening was there, and I begged them. They thought maybe I was shoving out and long on the tooth, and they didn't.
They thought you were yesterday's man, then.
Yeah, exactly, and that's exactly what they thought. And I mean, it was very tough decision on me to leave.
Yeah, how hard was that to leave a lifetime of service to the party?
I mean, not alone, you see, I'd go back and look at my father's input into politics as well, and a man that fought in both wars, and a Republican, and a man that was brought up and steeped in Fianna Fáil, and his family, and my mother's family, and that was very difficult for me to make that move, yeah.
Yeah,
I made the move, and I moved with a very good friend of mine, Michael Healy Ray, and I became a friend. I was a good friend of his before that, and his father before that, through the council. So I decided to back his campaign, and I'm involved with him ever since.
You are, and look, you came so close. The book is called The Final Count.
Yeah,
you went all the way to the
Supreme Court for me.
He is indeed. Yeah. You went all the way to the Supreme Court. And changed electoral history, I suppose. The first time a count has ever been ordered to be redone, and also changes made to how spoiled votes are adjudicated on.
Yeah, that was very difficult for me, and I have to give credit to Paul O'Donoghue, who was the solicitor for me, and Murphy, who was the barrister. They took on the case on a no-fault, no-field basis for me at the start. We got no joy out of the circuit court. And to appeal to the Supreme Court, like, it was going to cost money, and money I didn't have at the time. They agreed to handle the case for me, and they did a terrific job in it. And we went all the way up, and we won, and we changed the law of the land, which was only fair.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. And four votes then.
There was five votes between three of us.
Yes. Yes.
For two seats. There was five votes between Jimmy Maloney and myself, and two votes between Mike Kennelly and myself for two seats. And after recounting to the spoiled votes, they wouldn't allow me to look at the spoiled votes because they said I wasn't there when they announced it.
Yeah. So close.
Yeah.
So close. Again, another moment. Dan, look, tomorrow night in the Mermaids. I have a couple of comments here to put to you. Michael Healy Ray got in touch. Congrats to Dan Nuala and all the Kiley family on the launch of the great book, which I'm 100% convinced will be a bestseller both here and in the United States. Ned O'Sullivan, Senator Ned O'Sullivan, says, wishing my old friend, colleague, and sometimes adversary, Dan, all the best with his book, The Final Count. It'll be a cracker, I bet, says Dan, and others coming in as well. Tell me this, Dan. Look, when you decided to write the book and look at the book, you're talking through all your history and those days of Fianna Fáil. And Michael Healy Ray writes in the foreword of the book, he says that Charlie Haughey had many secrets and Dan Kiley knew every one of them. Yeah, what do you make of that statement?
I knew a good few of them anyway, I'll tell you that much. I got very friendly with Charlie Haughey's family. Charlie, yeah. And I stayed in Kinsale. I was very friendly with his children. And I socialised with them a lot. And they used to come and stay with me down in Tarbert on the way down to Dingle and that. And I became very friendly with the family. And
What do you miss Charlie?
I do. I thought he was very... A lot of people didn't like it. I thought he was very straight, outspoken, very straight, honest man. And he spoke off the hip, and that was Charlie. The funny thing about him, when he walked into a room, you seemed to freeze up at a meeting. I was at umpteen meetings with him. And he showed respect the minute he came in. People just froze and wanted to listen to him. And
did he have that kind of... That thing that, I suppose, if you are to be a leader or you are to be a successful politician, you need a bit of that kind of charisma, that presence, shall we say, when he walked into a room.
He absolutely had it. Yeah, absolutely. In abundance, yeah.
He had it in spades.
Yeah.
Well, look, Councillor Jackie Healyway gets in touch. Best wishes to Dan on the launch of his book. Dan's one of the most fascinating people I've had the pleasure of knowing. He's been a brilliant mentor to me as a young county councillor starting out. His knowledge is unrivalled and he's a great man to seek advice from. Good morning, Jerry. Dan Kiley and his brother had a bar as well next to JD's in Ballybunion. Very busy. We used to deliver drinks from Brown's in Castle Island, and Donny is gone now. God rest him. Great times we had. Say hello to Dan for me. Comes in another listener. And gets in touch and says, if Dan ran for Kerry County Council in 2024, he'd take a seat. What do you think, Dan?
Well, I'd love to, but the legs mightn't carry me around the constituency as lively as I used to be able to travel.
You'll have to get the open top car back again. Yes, that's the only answer.
Something like that, yeah, I would.
And wave at people like the Pope down the Oak Park Road.
Absolutely. But there were lovely times. I mean, the thing about being in politics, when I got into the Senate, you were above and side in Dublin, you were inside the tick of excitement and all the razzmatazz and everything, and all of a sudden you were back down in your constituency, down to the rough and tough, and you see both sides of the coin, like.
Yeah.
And it's when you go back to your constituency and see the condition of roads and housing and health and everything else like that, that it brought you to reality. But when you were in Dublin, you were in a different kind of a situation there. You were in kind of the upmarket part of politics and life, and you thought you were on cloud nine, but you very quickly came back down to earth when you came back to your constituency.
And you tried to live that through your politics. You always tried to stay in touch with what was happening on the ground.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you're not staying on the ground, you're only wasting your time.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed every minute of it. I love getting problems, and I love trying to get problems solved for people, and I saw the satisfaction in their faces and stuff like that. And I enjoyed it down to the ground, yeah.
That's what did it for you. Okay, a listener gets to touch. Dan also had Sandy Shaw in his ballroom.
Absolutely.
And Puppet, no shoes. Puppet on a string. She was famous for not wearing shoes during performances.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything that was of benefit from England or abroad or even the Eurovision, Johnny Logan, all those. I had all those people in the ballroom in Ballybunion. And I brought... I had Gay Byrne there a couple of times, and Mike Murphy there, and I had Twink there. Anyone you could think of from RT were down.
Yeah, used to come down, do different events and gigs.
And even Gay, I got Gay for the Ballybunion Bachelor, which I was very, very involved in. And it was a huge thing.
Yeah.
And it was far superior than the Rose of Tralee at the time.
Yeah.
And it's got bigger, I mean.
It got absolutely massive. Who was the most impressive person you ever met? Musician or otherwise, do you think?
Joe Dolan? Yeah.
He was something else?
Oh, yeah. Joe Dolan was something else, yeah.
The crowds, the adoration, the music.
Personality as well with Joe was Joe was very down to earth and lovely fella, like.
Unbelievable. Dan, listen, look, you've been great. It's been great talking to you and going through your memories. The book is The Final Count. Is it The Mermaids tomorrow night?
The Mermaids tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, and everybody is invited. You're all invited, and I'll be doing the signing there, and I'd love to see you all. Anyone, just walk in. Make sure you just walk in, and we'll have a chat and whatever.
We'll have a bit of crack.
Yeah.
Dan, good man.
And thank you very much for having me on this programme.
No problem. No problem, Dan. And thanks for all the help you gave us during the year, the many years of your time in politics and everything else like that. You were always available to come on the air, no matter what the controversy was, and give your side of the story. So good luck with the launch tomorrow night, Dan. Appreciate it. And very good luck with the book, The Final Count.
Thank you very much, Johnny. Appreciate it.